Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up in our second hour, we're going to take a look at the White House proposals for transparency in hospital pricing. So the prices negotiated between insurance companies and hospitals would be transparent. What would the effects of that be on pricing? And would that enable people to get procedures done less expensively than currently? But first, we turn our attention toward the seriousness with which employers are treating sexual harassment training. Sex harassment videos are a booming business, this for liability purposes, as companies, of course, are concerned about any litigation that could follow misconduct or alleged misconduct by employees. Also, just the greater attention that's shined on the subject as a result of all the news coverage. According to a recent New York Times piece, the number of sexual harassment training videos in the workplace proliferating, with actors hired to fill certain roles that can portray uncomfortable or dangerous situations. But how effective are these training videos? Now, we watch these here at KPCC, and I find them quite interesting, how they portray certain events and then ask you what's the best way to deal with them. I'd like to hear from you about your company's sex harassment videos. What do you think was particularly effective? What did you think wasn't? Perhaps even unintentionally humorous in how serious scenarios might have been played out in the videos. 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. And do you think sex harassment videos make a difference, that after people see them, that it has an effect on people's conduct? 866-893-5722. With me is Encino-based employment law specialist Sue Ben-David. Sue, thank you very much for being with us. Are these videos becoming universal in the workplace?
Well, they are becoming very common, and for our employers, the clients that we represent, they're doing it sort of two ways, one in person, and when it's impracticable or just not possible for them to do it in person, then they're having the employees watch the videos. So it is something that all employers, virtually all employers in California, have to do.
I've never been exposed to a in-person one. So how does that work? Do employees play different characters in those, or how is that done?
Well, when I do it, I do several things to make it be interactive, because by law in California, it must be interactive. I have a skit. So I actually call on participants in the audience to play out certain characters, and they enjoy that, because then you'll have the people who are, you know, want to be actors actually either stand up or from their seats pose and play these people. And then I'll ask the rest of the audience to issue spot and tell me, what do you think about this particular fact in that play, in the skit? And it really brings the audience together, because they're talking about the fact pattern that they just had.
So funny, because I wonder then, if you have someone in a company who's known for being, particularly approaching or crossing the line in behavior with others, or someone who's known for being highly sensitive and reacting to things that maybe others weren't, and then they're portraying characters either like themselves or differently, it sort of adds a secondary level to the thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for the most part, you're going to get people who are not. You know, you're not really the people who are the known harassers or the known victims. They're not usually likely to step up to the plate and participate. It's often, just the more vocal employees who are, the ones who just want to be in the public eye and want to stand up and participate. Sometimes it's the funny employees at the office, the ones who like to joke around, who want to then play these roles.
Sue, I haven't seen any research indicating the effectiveness of either live training that you're describing that you prefer because you do that, or video training on people's actual perceptions of behavior and whether it changes in a workplace, or even whether it's had an effect on claims or litigation against companies. Has anyone attempted to quantify this?
I haven't seen any statistical analysis or results about the impact, but I, from my personal experience, I know that my clients have told me it's had an impact. I have my own stories and the ways that I tell these stories. I'm actually doing it tonight for my own firm. But people tell me that they remember certain things that I've told them in years past during the training, and there's things that they keep in mind going forward. My goal is to tell them to, you know, just kind of scare them straight. I've got my personal rules that I'd like everybody to follow that are even more strict than what the law prohibits. And they tell me years later, oh, I remember that rule. I remember you telling me that.
Well, and I have a friend who has his own law firm, and he describes rules that are like so rigid and so go so far beyond the law for employee conduct. I thought, well, of course, he's a lawyer. Of course, he would be, you know, looking at any possible way there could be, you know, a possible claim against him. So is that sort of where you're at, that you have about as strict as the standard could be?
Well, I'll tell you the strict, the standard that I use, that I advise people to follow. I call it my grandmother rule, my grandma rule. And my grandma rule, of course, I'm envisioning my grandmother who came, you know, was born in 1903 in Russia. So this is a long time ago. She's already long since passed. But my guidance to people that hear my training is that if you wouldn't do it or say it or show it to your grandmother, then don't do it, say it, or show it at work. And I view that as that's higher than the golden rule, right? The golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Because frankly, if you like dirty jokes and you use profanity, you're going to like that at work. This is a higher standard. So my philosophy is if you aim for that high grandma rule that I talk about, then you'll always be safe. You'll never have your name after the little V that's in the pleadings, you know, versus, right? Because we don't want anybody to get sued for individual liability. So my goal is reach for that high standard, and then you'll have nothing to worry about.
All right. We're talking with Sue Ben-David, attorney at Lewitt Hackman in Encino Employment Law, the specialty. She chairs that department at the firm. Again, I'd like to hear from you about the sexual harassment videos that have proliferated that more and more companies are using, or sometimes in-person training, as Sue is describing as she does. What do you think of it? What do you find effective? What do you find ineffective? Has it changed the environment in your workplace for the better or for the worse? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Rob in Hollywood says, I teach at LA Valley College and at LACC. There's value in the videos because you need to figure out how to react to something you've overheard or what's been reported to you, because Title IX has different obligations for faculty versus counselors. Rob, that's interesting. So yeah, in an educational setting, there is mandatory reporting that comes into play and gender issues under Title IX. So Sue, is the training typically different for those that work in academe?
It's similar, though yes, it can be different because you are talking about different rules that apply both, you know, to public employment when there's in the school setting, but in the private school, you're dealing with children. And like you said, the mandated reporter rules. Some of the issues are similar, though. We want, frankly, everybody to be treated respectfully and the way they're supposed to be treated in the workplace. And that's our goal, is to tell people what the rules of the road are, you know, and make sure they follow those rules, and what to do if they see a problem. If there is a problem, then tell them, here's what's going to happen. Report the problem, and here are the next steps.
It's funny, here at KPCC, we had one video harassment training a few years ago, which I thought was not quite as effective, just because there was a little bit of a lack of clarity, I thought. And then the most recent one that we had, I thought was absolutely excellent. It really did, to me, a much better job of sort of laying out where the lines are, what obligations are. And I wonder, Sue, is there enough gray area in this that it can be kind of challenging if you're dealing with a video training program to find something that everyone agrees is the best way to present these scenarios?
Yeah, I mean, that is the problem. When you have a video, you can't interact with the audience. The speaker can't get feedback from the audience. And every workplace is different. If you're training a school, it's going to be different than if you're training at a manufacturing plant, than if you're training in a law firm or a CPA firm. And you really want to make sure that you're addressing the people and the issues that they're experiencing. And when you're training at a construction site, we're not dealing with people who work on a computer every day. But if we're working in an office, then we are. And we want to focus the training on what's really going on in the day-to-day lives of these people. You really want to make it employer specific to make it be meaningful.
All right. We're going to continue our conversation about sexual harassment training, either on video or in person. Our phone lines are open. If you're an employer and you've tried different approaches with your staff members to sexual harassment training, what did you like or not like? What sort of feedback did you get from those that work from you? 866-893-KPCC or the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. We're back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. Such a pleasure to have you with us. You might have noticed we're doing, over a couple-week period of time, the Purple Project for Democracy, KPECC, in a national collaboration with other broadcasters and news organizations. Today, we're going to have a wonderful conversation on the First Amendment and freedom of speech, and how far does that right extend? What are the limits on freedom of speech as determined by the Supreme Court, as well as there are folks who would argue that there should be greater limits on what a person can say. We'll talk about that coming up in the next hour. Right now, our focus on things you can say and do, which intrude into the workplace, sexual harassment, and the training that companies use to try and alert employees to their best practices on it, to whom they need to report something that concerns them, and how they talk about the issue in the workplace. 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Sue, some of the videos use animation, others use actors more specifically. What do you think about, you know, the different artistic approaches to these films?
I think it's whatever is going to be effective. If cartoons, you know, the animation is effective, or if live people are more effective, I think that's really up to the employer. I personally think it'd be more effective to see people, actually live actors personally, but you know, I would leave that to the experts who are actually creating the videos. But personally, I think that using the individuals as actors would be better. Can I point up one more thing?
Of course, yeah.
Speech concept. You know, you were just talking about freedom of speech, and a lot of times when I'm doing the training, the people in the training will say, "But I've got freedom of speech; I can say whatever I want," right? Because they hear that. Have these rights. And I say, well, actually, no. I said, everybody has freedom of thought. You can think whatever you like. You can be as discriminatory in your head. But really what separates the men from the boys and the women from the girls is what they do with those thoughts. And, you know, again, I can't stop you from being discriminatory at home or in your head, but you can't do it here. Sorry, it's just not allowed.
Well, I always love it when I hear, you know, talk show hosts who get suspended for something say they're interfering with my freedom of speech. But, of course, this is about government impinging on freedom of speech, not your employer. Your employer has not free rein, but certainly things that they can make justified cases to limit what you can say. 866-893-KPCC. Chris, in East Hollywood, I understand that you're in a management position. So how does it work with your employees?
Sure. We've got a bar, music venue, recording studio complex. And so it's traditionally a pretty loose environment behind the bar. I had all of my employees recently complete an online training through our ADP HR, and, you know, following that up with a nice in-person, face-to-face, individual meeting seemed to work really, really well. I wasn't sure of the, you know, efficiency of the online training as opposed to, you know, fully in-person, but it tended to really work, and, you know, most of the staff, you know, has already come to me with some questions, concerns, things of that nature. It's been really helpful.
Chris, given that you're talking about a performance venue where, you know, sometimes there can be sexual overtones, you know, during events and things like that, and or flirtation that goes on, perhaps even with staff members and people that are coming through. Were there any of your staffers who expressed concerns that somehow this would have a chilling effect on a hospitable social environment for the customers, or did everyone feel like that line could be clearly drawn after this training?
That's a really good point. We had several employees kind of bring that up. You know, the nature of our business is to make people feel entertained, right, and have a great time. But, you know, the vast majority of feedback was, you know, I didn't know a few of these things. And these things are very gray in our business. I think people are really feeling more comfortable about setting boundaries for themselves.
Yeah, Chris, I appreciate it very much. Yeah, and I wonder if there's even a gender difference in it because, of course, for women who work in service industry jobs, often, you know, they're the ones who've borne the brunt of terrible conduct on the part of customers and had bosses that aren't particularly sympathetic, like, hey, look, you know, part of your job is to deal with this, and leaving the employees kind of, you know, without any defense. Sue Ben-David, can you speak to that issue in a place that has public performances or, you know, is hospitality oriented?
Yes, you know, they often, employees will be told by managers that the customer is always correct, but not in the context when harassment is occurring. And there, and an employer, there is potential liability if the employer is able to, knows about it and is able to take steps to prevent it from happening. And I've had clients where customers aren't vaccinated. I've had to write letters to these unknown customers who walk into the store so we could hand them the letter and say, you're not welcome here, and stop harassing our people, to take effective steps to stop the customers from harassing. As a matter of fact, when I was a first-year lawyer, my paralegal came to me and said that she was being harassed by one of our clients. And at that point, you know, I'm the first-year associate, so the partner in charge had to go talk to the client, and he said, quote, keep your paws off my paralegal. And he apologized, everything was fine. But yeah, sometimes you have to have the difficult call with the customer to say, we don't tolerate this.
All right. Doug in Vernon says, I'm an employer. We've been doing harassment training at least 8 years. We have 120 employees. I think the biggest thing with training is the culture has to come top down. The training does nothing on its own. Your boss has to talk about this from a zero tolerance standpoint. We even train our temporary workers, Doug says. We talk about it regularly, not just once a year. Sue, that sound like sound practice?
Yeah, absolutely. I like when the actual president, the CEO, the CFO, and the C-suite folks attend the training. And they're the ones who are doing the introduction to say this is not tolerated, and that's why we're doing this.
All right. Thank you so much, Sue Ben-David. Appreciate your being with us and talking about the issue of sexual harassment training, either video or in person. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
She heads up the employment law portion of her Encino based firm, Lewitt Hackman, Sue Ben-David. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Next hour, one of the topics we take up is the nature of humility. Parents are always telling their kids, you got to act humble. But what is that beyond just behavior? We talk about authentic humility. That's come in our second hour.